Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We have a lot to share. The latest on health and healing. Recently, I was asked, why don't I recommend beer? It's natural. It's made from grains. If you watch the ads, it shows you spring mountain water and barley. What's so bad? I'll tell you the bad about beer on today's show. Additionally, in the latest on health and nutrition, the pharmaceutical damages are 500% worse than what the public or even physicians were aware of. Yet, the pharmaceutical companies have known how bad their products are. They just keep it secret because it wouldn't be as profitable. I'm also going to give you the latest on healing. We do something every single day. Today, building your immune system. I'm going to just take one ingredient because sometimes if you give too many ingredients, they can't get it all down and they can't afford it. So one ingredient that's not expensive that can really help your immune system. Also, diabetes. It's linked to what? And the latest on how a rhodiola can make a difference in extending our life. Always the latest on health and healing. My guest in the second part of our program is Dr. Junger. Dr. Junger is a medical doctor, and he is board certified in cardiology and internal medicine. And we're going to talk about the importance of your gut and digestive health in strengthening our immune system and preventing illness. Then, for the remainder of the program, you're going to hear from the people that you have not heard from: the corporate Democrats, the limousine liberals, the faux progressives on MSNBC. I was watching last evening to see who would they have on who could offer some compelling evidence that even though there were, unfortunately, casualties in the terrorist attack on the civilians, that we don't have the hard proof that it was a Syrian regime. And deja vu, all over again. Why can't we stop and let independent researchers determine who was responsible and then act accordingly instead of rushing in? There has to be another agenda. I would hope that on Chris Hayes' show, because he's a bright person, he has all the intellectual capability of deconstructing any of the neocons' arguments, and yet he did none of the above last night. It was embarrassing. Either he's biting his tongue because he's afraid of what might happen if he lets it rip with some really good people who could just totally destroy the pro-war mindset, or he is simply not aware of it. In either case, we will bring you the voices today. Ray McGovern, Robert Scheer, Tom Carlucci, Robert Fisk. Yeah, these are the people that you should be listening to because they'll tell you the truth about what's really behind it. What's our motive? Why are we really going in there to punish this regime? What is the likely outcome? Well, let's just take a look at Libya. That's the outcome. Who's it benefit? Israel. Where did the intelligence come from? The Mossad. Oh, there's a group we should trust, not. So we'll show you the truth. From their environmental segment today, Goodbye Miami. From Rolling Stone, Jeff Goodell. By the century's end, rising sea levels will turn the nation's urban fantasy land into an urban Atlantis. But long before the city is completely underwater, chaos will begin. I'll give you the latest on that. Plus, we have some other things on the environment, and some of it very good. The Yankee Vermont plant is closing next year. So for all of you who have been social activists and nuclear activists, and for all the leadership that we've received from Harvey Wasserman and others, and Michio Kaku, Helen Caldicott, for those people who've been at the forefront, thank you. And for those of you who watched Knocking on the Devil's Door, shared it with your state legislators, shared it with other activists, thank you as well. It paid off. A year and a half ago, we had 104 nuclear power plants. Right now, it looks like we have just about 98, 99 that'll stay open, and I believe we can close most of those. Inhospitable oceans, the acidification rate, unseen, quote, in 250 million years or ever. The newest article from a mainstream environmental publication shows you what's happening to the oceans. So we have a full show, always information that empowers. Let us begin. So you're kicking back and you're watching the ball game. That's good. And you're enjoying yourself. You're relaxing. You're with friends or family. That's even better. We need to relax. We need to de-stress. We need to socialize. We need to be around people that allow us just to hang out and be ourselves. All that I support. But almost every commercial shows people drinking a beer or eating a pizza. And then I have to say, why? If the emphasis is upon the ball game and socializing and being around our friends, that's all supportable. Here's what's in that beer that you didn't know. Oh, you saw the ads, right? No, of course you did. You know, the fields of barley and the spring water off the cold Rockies. Yeah. They don't have to put on the label what's actually in the beer. You didn't know that. Well, that's because of their lobbying efforts. And that's also because they managed to get healthy sounding ingredients on the label. They choose and keep all unhealthy ingredients actually in the product off the label. Now, for any other food product that we consume, a vitamin or a protein powder or anything else that's made, a bag of potato chips, you have to put it all on the label. But not with beer. It's voluntary. That's the power of lobbying and money. So let's just see what's in that nice cold bottle of beer yours. How about MSG, monosodium glutamate? Propylene glycol, that helps stabilize a beer's head, a foam. And by the way, in higher amounts, it can cause health problems. High fructose corn syrup. Caramel coloring. FD&C blue, red 40, yellow 5, all bad. Insect dyes. Glycerol monosterate. Yeah, and that's just the beginning. Several beers contain high fructose corn syrup, most of which is genetically modified, and Isinglass, a clarifying agent made from the swim bladder of fish. They take out the bladder and fish and put it in there. But you're vegan, or you're someone who would not want that. Well, it's in there. And they normally say key ingredients, roasted, molded barley, hops, yeast, and water. They don't have to put anything else in there. Newcastle beer uses artificial caramel color to stimulate the golden brown color that is supposed to come from toasted barley. Miller Lite, Coors, Corona, Foster's, Pabst, and Red Stripe use corn syrup. Molson Coors also uses corn from that is genetically engineered. Budweiser, Bud Light, Busch Light, and Michelob Ultra use dextrose made from corn. Anheuser-Busch uses corn. Confused? Yep. Why? Because beer is not under the FDA and hence a nutrition facts label. It is regulated by the U.S. Treasury Department's Alcohol and Tobacco Tax and Trade Bureau, TTB. And so they have a right to pretty much do anything they want and voluntarily keep it off. One more reason that we are not getting what we had hoped. I've produced 5 films challenging the integrity, efficacy, and safety of our current medical paradigm, such as the war on health and prescription for disaster. It's just 2 examples. Time and again, I have showed that the pharmaceutical industry has generally received 100-to-1 return on its investment in lobbying and advertising. They give $1 million, well, they get $100 million in profit back. That's how it works. It's 100-to-1. That's why they have the largest amount of lobbyists in Washington. Frequently, it's 3 lobbyists to every member of Congress. And, of course, they have an unlimited amounts of money to spend, all of which they can deduct as a business expense. And, of course, they make astronomical profits. 3 years ago, we managed, through Bill Falloon of Life Extension and his lawyers, to get the actual costs of a 30-day supply of the 10 top-selling drugs in America. I remember Bill telling me at the time, Gary, you know, you can break this story. I wanted to put it in the film, which we did. And he said, you're not going to believe the percentage of markups over a 30-day supply. Well, normally, for example, in food, in produce, it's generally anywhere from 20 to 50%. In vitamins, it's anywhere from 30 to 50%. These are small markups, mind you. Out of that markup, you have to pay your salaries, your insurance, your rent. You have to pay for the cost of merchandise. So most places work on a tiny markup. In diamonds, you may have a big markup. It can be anywhere from 3 to 500%. In clothing, you have anywhere from 3 to 500% markup. And those are considered extremely high. And then you get to pharmaceuticals. And they've written a whole new universe for themselves. For example, I found the low end. I mean the real low end. 5,000% profit markup over the generic version, meaning if you bought the one that's on the shelf, the one that your doctor gives you a prescription for, versus what if you could buy it, the same identical product made by the same company, but the generic brand, you'd be paying 5,000% markup in a drugstore. But that was the low end. The high end, 100,000 to 500,000%. I found one popular top-selling drug that cost about 7 cents, that's 7 pennies, to make and sold for over $200 for a month's supply. That gives you an idea how much profit they make. So it's all about the profit and not about whether it's beneficial or safe. This is from Paul Fass, National Society. Quote, regardless what members of the medical monopoly bound by Big Pharma reveal as dangerous or fraudulent, their viewpoint still holds pharmaceuticals as the only medicine that works. Never mind herbs, alternative medicine, whole organic foods, or supplements. That's the medical monopoly mindset, which is shared by both innocent, ignorant believers whose livelihoods depend upon doing what they've been told while practicing denial, and the duplicitous manipulators who control the snake oil show and benefit the most. A slight crack appeared briefly in their medical arrogance. Researchers from Stanford Medical School created databases that prove there are 500% more adverse effects from pharmaceuticals than displayed or publicized. The researchers created a computerized dual database system to analyze data from the FDA's adverse reporting system. Their observation that safety trials are conducted on the public after a drug hits the market is noteworthy. They also mentioned that clinical trials for obtaining FDA approval are insufficient for assuming safety for everyone within all situations. However, their viewpoint is still locked into the medical monopoly mindset. The Stanford research is also attempting to provide more knowledge for better prescription. And this was published in Science Translational Medicine by Dr. Russ Altman, MD, PhD. And so, whatever they've been telling us, they were lying. They're 500% more toxic than what we have been led to believe, and that's unfortunate. Now, something we could all benefit from, strengthening our immune system naturally. Now, there are about 43 different items that can do that, but most people don't have the wherewithal to do all that. So what can we do? Well, there's a couple things you can do. Let me just give you the simplest thing right off the bat. This would be my easiest one, least expensive one, so we can afford this, and this is what I want you to do. Look for the reishi mushroom. R-E-I-S-H-I, Reishi. It's really powerful. You rarely hear about it. You hear about the Maitake. That's the superstar. But Reishi's right up there. It's been used historically to boost immunity and vitality. It has broad spectrum benefits. It constitutes one of the best ways of helping your body's stem cells, the T cells. It includes an array of unique polysaccharides and triterpenes and other constituents. And these activate the cell surface receptors that modulate normal immunity. So the Reishi mushroom supports your production of endogenous antioxidant enzymes like superoxide dismutase, catalase, and glutathione, which in turn support the body's natural immune defense against free radical damage. So it's just terrific. It's one of the best things you can do to build an immune system. Now, we're all going to come into contact with viruses and bacteria and parasites, and we don't all get sick. The health of our immune system will determine whether we're going to get sick or not. So, Reishi extract, I'm going to suggest about, let's say it's from the Ganoderma lucidum, probably about 900 milligrams with a standardized 14% polysaccharide. That'd be about 140 milligrams. That would be the best balance for you. And you can get these out there in most health food stores. That's something inexpensive, easy to use, healthy in the extreme. Now, something else that's healthy for us that we don't use is called rhodiola, R-H-O-D-I-O-L-A. There was a good article published in PLOS One, one of the major scientific publications, on the rhodiola, rosea, and how it extended the life of span of fruit flies. It's an herb and very, very good for you. And what does it do? Why should we consume it? Well, there's a lot of studies out there showing that, and also in how it's been used historically, that it is directly related to life expectancy. So I would take it as a way of enhancing broad spectrum overall enhancement of the lifestyle. So at the same time, I'd be taking L-carnosine or resveratrol. Those of you who eat more red meat, according to the Journal of the American Medical Association, you run a greater risk of diabetes, type 2. A big study, the Men's Health Professional Study, doctors, in this 30-year period, and 48,000 women in the Nurses Health Study in the same period, found that the more meat you eat, the more red meat you eat, the more likely you are to have diabetes. So one way you can prevent it, get cut down on the red meat. Also, there's new some really good research from the European Society of Human Genetics that shows that those who take vitamin D3 can lower their blood pressure. There's also another study that evaluated 1,900 men and women and found, this was called the Canadian Health Measure Survey, and found that those who took vitamin D also lowered their blood pressure and lowered their homocysteine level, their C-reactive protein level, and fibrinogen level as well. And cinnamon, good old spice, according to the Journal of Alzheimer's, can help prevent Alzheimer's disease. So that's the latest on health and nutrition. Now let's go to the latest on environmental episodes. First up, we're looking at the oceans. Here's the latest from Common Dreams. This is a major study that is entitled Inhospitable Oceans, published in the current issue of Nature Climate Change. Quote, in both a new study published yesterday and a German marine biologist, Hans Poitner, warns the world is facing a crisis of ocean acidification, an intricately woven aspect of global warming and climate change, is now happening at a rate unparalleled, quote, in the life of the oceans as far back as 250 million years and perhaps faster rate than ever in the planet's entire existence. Quote, the current rate of change is likely to be more than 1,000% faster than it's been at any time in its evolutionary history. All right, so you say, so what? Why should I care about the acidification of the ocean? Well, a couple reasons. First, because oceans are one of the biggest areas of focus for current climate change research, and the global warming of the deep ocean is really bad because that's where it's supposed to be cold, and that's what creates the current, and that's what creates the conveyor belt that takes warm water from the south and takes it up through the north and takes the cold water from the north and brings back to the south. If you get too much warm water at the deeper level, that's not good. That could slow down that conveyor or could turn it off. If that happens, you've got a new ice age over all of the Mediterranean in England. And it's getting to where that could happen. Secondly, it's about the coral. Corals are likely to have a really bad future. Why? Because the invertebrate species secretes calcium carbonate to make the rocky coastal reefs that form the basis of the most productive and beautiful ecosystems in the oceans. More acidic oceans interfere with the corals being able to live. And a lot of corals are already dying. It's dying from the acidification from the heat. And that, in turn, kills off everything that's involved in the coral reef. You'll have oysters, squid, mollusks, and they cannot survive when the acidification of the ocean occurs. And a lot of other fish will die as well. So that's what happens, and we're not even aware of it. Now, good news on Vermont's front. The Vermont Yankee power plant, the nuclear power plant, is going to close next year. And that's great news. So let us keep our, and that means there's only 99 operating reactors in that will be in force. And so we've managed to get 5 close. So let us, from Carl Grossman to Harvey Wasserman to everyone else, let's keep the pressure going and re-watch Knocking on the Devil's Door. It's up on the internet just so you can see what we have to have so we can go forward. And finally, radioactive bluefin tuna cut off California coast a year ago. We're just finding out about it. Stanford University study found that every single one of the bluefin tuna they caught had very high levels of strontium in it, and cesium, cesium-134 and cesium-137. The half-life is almost 4,000 years. Not good. Don't eat the tuna. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Have you with us, everyone. Just so you understand what I said, every single sample of bluefin tuna they caught a year ago had very high levels in it. Well, what about the last year? What about all the tuna people been eating? There is no safe tuna from the Pacific. None. So now they tell us, a year late. Okay, we've got a lot to go. Let me just give you a program announcement, and then I'm going to play something I think you'll enjoy. I'm going to be premiering my new film, and this is our first announcement. As any of you know, I always like to premiere a film for our New York audience, and I'll be doing a premiere in Los Angeles and Washington, D.C., and out at Huntington Arts as well. But this is one night only, and here it is. Write this date down so you have it, September 12th, which is Thursday, 7 to 10 p.m. at the Ethical Culture Center. That's on 64th and Central Park West. I've done, I think, 5 premieres there. I do it because it's one of the largest theaters in all of New York. Plus, we're going to have a whole panel afterwards. The topic, the silent epidemic. The true history of vaccines. Now, I've done 2 documentaries, award-winning documentaries, on Vaccine Nation and Autism Made in USA. This answers the most important and fundamental question. Are vaccines safe? Are they effective? Are they not safe? Are they not effective? What is the actual evidence? This is one of those really shake you up and down and wake you up documentaries. This is going to have some serious impact because virtually every one of the different vaccine groups out there who are representing children's interests because children have been hurt, every one of them ended up saying, well, I'm for vaccines, I'm just not for bad vaccines, and you know, I want to see that children who have been injured are helped. And I'm thinking, after I did my other 2, why are they saying that these vaccines are good or we need them? Even Andrew Wakefield is pro-vaccine. So I did the homework, I did the scholarship, then went around the world to film. And I just asked these questions, and these are all top scientists, top toxicologists, virologists, immunologists, the best minds in the world. I filmed about 48 of them. Asked them all the same question. Don't spin it. Tell me the truth. Are vaccines safe, any individual vaccine, or in combinations? Are they effective? Do they work? This is the documentary that should be the final documentary on vaccines. This should cause a shift in everyone's mind. If you want to join me on September 12th, 7 to 10 p.m., you cannot get tickets at the door. You must order them in advance. Call the following number. I'm going to give you a number you can call. It's an 877 number, and that way you'll be able to order them. That's the only way to get in. And remember, we're always full, so you better call if you want to come. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065 for the world premiere of The Silent Epidemic, The Truth About Vaccines. It'll be premiered, plus there'll be a panel that are flying in from around the United States to talk on this topic and answer questions. And everybody will be given 2 copies of the film, one to keep for yourself and one to give to others that you'd like to motivate and inspire. Again, join me on September 12th, 7 to 10, at the Ethical Culture Center, but you must have a ticket to get in, 877-627-5065. Now let's go over to say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I just want to add this word here. I believe you have a few very impressive fans because we just found this from, this is an article actually from Sunday night, and it says, Economist caution, prepare for massive wealth destruction. And so now all these well-respected economists, billionaires, and noted authors are telling us to prepare for wealth destruction. People like Mark Faber, Peter Schiff, Donald Trump. All of these people now are saying exactly, almost word for word, what you've been talking about, in the way you're saying the dollar is going to hell, 50% unemployment, 90% stock market drop, 100% annual inflation, and this is all starting now. So
I would say what I say is a little different. I would say that if the stock market was represented by the true economy and not an inflated bubble economy, it would be 50% less than what it is. I believe that we will see a 20% official unemployment rate within the next 24 months, but it'll be closer to 40% actual. We're going to be looking at Greece and Spain numbers when the dollar is no longer the reserve currency, once we get into another Middle East war, which we are going to get into, and once the price of oil goes through the roof, which is inevitable that that will happen, then suddenly the person that was watching Sean Hannity and standing up and saluting, yeah, let's go get someone, and they're going to suddenly go out to and see that their car is going to take them $300 to fill it up with gas, or that whatever was transported to them in their supermarket to eat is now going to be passing on that cost to them. And suddenly people are going to say, well, why am I paying for all this? Well, didn't you connect any of the dots? Didn't you see that what a person does in one area of the world will impact other people? And they don't think there's no depth of thought. And that's what I'm saying. I want you to hold on here for a moment, Luann, because I'm going to play some of the people who were at their latest health retreat, which was a very successful fundraiser. Probably one of the most successful fundraisers in WBAI history. And the nice thing it was, the premium was the retreat, and you donated your time, I donated mine, everyone donated their time
to
help
the
station. Now, I'm going to come back to that in a moment, but I want to offer up the voices of individuals who were not invited on Rachel Maddow or Chris Hayes or some of the other shows that should have had them to offer pause before we go forward. First off, from Tony Cartolucci from Global Research. The article, U.S. Claims Against Syria, Fabrication Spun Up from the West's Own Dubious Intelligence Agencies. Quote, the Wall Street Journalist confirmed what many suspected, that the West's so-called evidence of the latest chemical attacks in Syria pinned on the Syrian government are fabrications spun up from the West's own dubious intelligence agencies. The Wall Street Journal reveals the U.S. is citing claims from Israel's Mossad intelligence agency, fed to the CIA, a repeat of the fabrications that led up to the Iraq war, the Libyan war, and has been used now for 3 years to justify continuing support of extremists operating within and along Syria's borders. Both Mossad and the CIA are clearly compromised in terms of objectivity and legitimacy. Neither exists nor is expected to provide impartial evidence, but rather to facilitate by all means necessary the self-serving agendas, interests, and objectives of their respective governments. That both Israel and the United States, as far back as 2007, have openly conspired towards the overthrow of the government of Syria through a carefully engineered sectarian bloodbath discredits entirely the respective intelligence agencies. This is precisely why an impartial, objective, third-party investigation has been called for by the international community and agreed upon by the Syrian government. A third-party investigation the United States has now urged to be canceled ahead of its planned military strikes. That's one. Separately, from Robert Scheer from Truthdig, the article, The Terror Con, quote, for defense contractors, the government officials who write them mega checks, and the hawks in the media who cheer them on, the name of the game is threat inflation. And no one has been better at it than the folks at Booz Allen Hamilton, the inventors of the new boondoggle called cyber warfare. That's the company under contract with the National Security Agency that employed whistleblower Edward Snowden, the information security engineer whose revelation of Booz Allen's is enormously profitable and pervasive spying on Americans now threatens the firm's profitability and its parent hedge fund, the Carlyle Group. Booz Allen, whose top personnel serve in key positions at the National Security Agency and vice versa after the inconvenient collapse of the Cold War, has been attempting to substitute terrorist for communist as the enemy of choice. A difficult switch indeed for the military-industrial complex about which Dwight Eisenhower, the general term president, had so eloquently warned us. But just when the good times for war profiteers seemed to be forever gone, there came 9/11 and the terrorist enemy, the gift that keeps on giving. for acts of terror always will occur in a less than perfect world, serving as an ideal excuse for squandering resources as well as our freedoms. Just ask the New York Times columnist Thomas Friedman and Bill Keller, rising to the defense of the National Security Agency snooping on a scale never before imagined in human history. They warn us that if there was a second 9/11 attack, we would lose all of our civil liberties, so we should be grateful for the ones we've lost. No nation in history has ever possessed such an imbalance of military superiority and the ability to ward off foreign threats without sacrificing its core values. Never has this country been as vulnerable to foreign attacks as when the founders approved our Constitution with its Fourth Amendment and other protections of individual sovereignty against an intrusive government. They did so out of the conviction that individual freedom makes us stronger rather than weaker as a nation. In short, they trusted in the essential wisdom of the people as opposed to the pundits who deride it. Once again, Friedman has misplaced faith in the work of the intelligence community. The National Security Agency's snooping was quite extensive before 9/11 and certainly in full force prior to the Boston Marathon attack, but did not prevent either event. Indeed, our much-vaunted spy agencies still have not come up with an explanation for how 19 hijackers, 15 from our ally, Saudi Arabia, managed to legally enter this country and learn to fly, and all while they were on the government's watch. Nor have these intelligence agencies explained why the only three countries that recognized the Taliban government, sponsors of Al-Qaeda, were the same Saudi Arabia, as well as our other friends Pakistan and the United Arab Emirates. For information on the United Arab Emirates connection, the National Security Agency might check with its buddies at Booz Allen Hamilton. As the New York Times reported, when the United Arab Emirates, by the way, that's the one behind a lot of the information and propaganda that you also see on Al Jazeera against, first you saw it against Libya and then you saw it against Syria. They wanted to create their own version of the National Security Agency. It turned to Booz Allen Hamilton to replicate the world's largest, most powerful spy agency in the desert. And they did it. So, and by the way, they're tracking the Iranians. Let me see. The Iranians, were they involved in 9/11? No. But the Saudis were. Next up. This is from Washington blog. Quote, the U.S., Britain, and Israel have used chemical weapons within the last 10 years. Israel has used white phosphorus in 1909 during Operation Cast Lead. Israel ratified Protocol 3 of the Convention on Certain Conventional Weapons, Protocol 3, which outlaws the use of incendiary devices and more, in 2007. So, they engaged in war crimes. In 1925, the Geneva Protocol, which is different from the Protocol Number 3, prohibits, quote, the use in war of asphyxiation, poisonous, or other gases, end quote. The use of white phosphorus may also be a war crime under other international treaties and domestic U.S. laws. For example, the Battle Book, published by the U.S. Command and General Staff College at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, contains the following sentence, quote, it is against the law of land warfare to employ white phosphorus against personal targets. The U.S. National Safety Council states that, quote, white phosphorus is a poison. If its combustion occurs in a confined space, white phosphorus will remove the oxygen from the air and render the air unfit to support life. It is considered a dangerous disaster hazard because it emits highly toxic fumes. The EPA has listed white phosphorus as a hazardous air pollutant. Indeed, it's interesting to note that the U.S. previously called white phosphorus a chemical weapon when Saddam Hussein used it against the Kurds. It has just come out this week that the U.S. encouraged Saddam to use chemical weapons. Moreover, the U.S. and Britain have been dropping depleted uranium in virtually every country they fight, which causes severe health problems. And Israel has been using depleted uranium in Syria. But no one is saying what they have done as a crime. Also, as bad as this gas attack was, and it was horrendous, why did we not go after the generals in Egypt when they killed as many individuals who were peacefully protesting in one day, and not a single thing has been done to them. Also, from Robert Fiss from The Independent, does Obama know he's fighting on Al-Qaeda's side? If Barack Obama decides to attack the Syrian regime, he has ensured for the first time in history that the United States will be on the same side as Al-Qaeda. The men who destroyed so many thousands on 9/11 will then be fighting alongside the very nation whose innocents they so cruelly murdered almost 12 years ago. Quite an achievement for Obama, Cameron, and Hollande, and the rest of the miniature warlords. This, of course, will not be trumpeted by the Pentagon or the White House, nor, I suppose, by Al-Qaeda, though they are both trying to destroy Bashir. So are the Nusra Front, one of Al-Qaeda's affiliates. But it does raise some interesting possibilities. Maybe the Americans should ask Al-Qaeda for intelligence help. After all, this is the group with boots on the ground. There will be some ironies, of course. While the Americans' drones Al-Qaeda to death in Yemen and Pakistan, along, of course, with the usual flock of civilians, they will be giving them, with the help of Cameron and Obama, material assistance in Syria by hitting Al-Qaeda's enemies. Indeed, you can bet your bottom dollar that the one target the Americans will not strike in Syria will be Al-Qaeda or the Nusra Front. And our prime minister will applaud whatever the Americans do, thus allying himself with Al-Qaeda, whose London bombings have slipped his mind. And finally, the prince. Meet the man who co-opted democracy in the Middle East. From Truthdig. Now that the Arab Spring has been turned into a totally owned subsidiary of the Saudi royal family, it is time to honor Prince Bandar bin Sultan as the most effective Machiavellian politician of the modern era. How slick for this head of the Saudi intelligence agency to finance the Egyptian military's crushing of that nation's first ever democratic election while being the main source of arms for pro-Al-Qaeda insurgents in Syria. Just consider that a mere 12 years ago, this same Bandar was a beleaguered Saudi ambassador in Washington, a post held from 1983-2005, attempting to explain his nation's connection to 15 Saudi nationals who had somehow secured legal documents to enter the U.S. and succeeded in hijacking planes that blew up the World Trade Center and the Pentagon and crashed in a field in Pennsylvania. How awkward, given that the Saudi ambassador had been advocating that the U.S. officials go easy on the Taliban governments in Afghanistan, where those attacks incubated. The ties between Saudi Arabia and the alleged Al-Qaeda terrorist attacks were manifest. The terrorists were followers of the Saudi-financed branch of Wahhabi Islam, and their top leader, Osama bin Laden, was a powerful person from one of the most powerful families in the Saudi kingdom, which, along with the United Arab Emirates and Pakistan, have been the only three nations in the world to recognize the legitimacy of the Taliban government in Afghanistan that provided sanctuary to Al-Qaeda. Yet Bandar had no difficulty arranging safe passage out of Washington for many Saudis, including members of the bin Laden family that the U.S. intelligence agency might want to have interrogated. So it goes on to talk about this man who was behind the arming of the terrorists and insurgents in Syria. And they're Sunni. They're Wahhabi. They're the radical Islamists. And yet that's who we end up winning if we bomb Syria and then we'll have another Libya. Doesn't make any sense. I'm Gary, and all those are some voices otherwise we would not hear. Now, Luann, I'm going to hold till tomorrow because of my guest coming up. I'm going to hold till tomorrow the voices from the retreat because they wanted to make some statements about their experience during that week, and we'll have them on so they can share some insights of what's happened to them, and we'd also like to hear from them what's changed since you've gone home and what
absolutely. That's
what good
great.
Things have you carried on. And again, we are going to be doing as a fundraiser for this station and our sister station BAI and PFW in Washington a first 1 or 2 weeks of October, so those who could not come because we were full can hopefully get in then if they call in time. Give your number, please, Luann.
Surely. It's 631-504-6198. 631-504-6198.
Good. That's if you'd like to join us to detox, rejuvenate, de-stress, rebuild, start over, and do so in a beautiful, loving environment with some of the finest minds in America who will be there to help you, all as a fundraiser for our sister stations. Now let's go over and say hello to our guest who's standing by, and he is in Los Angeles. He is Dr. Alejandro, is it Younger or Junger?
Alejandro Junger.
Junger, J-U-N-G-E-R. And he is a international visionary doctor in cardiology. He's board certified in internal medicine and cardiology, practicing in both New York and California. And after becoming a patient of our current dominant medical system, he embarked on a thorough journey and exploration into natural and integrative medicine to heal himself, which led to his living and studying in India and its Eastern medical practices and other natural practices. And he now understands the concepts of integrative medicine, detoxification. And he is also the author of Clean Gut, Eliminating the Root Causes of Disease and Revolutionizing Your Health. Well, it's nice to have you with us today.
Yes, nice to be with you again.
There's been a growing body of research published lately on the importance of our gut's role in our immune system and for preventing a large variety of diseases. In particular, are the clinical trials confirming the benefits of including probiotics and favorable bacteria in our diet. But rarely do people consider the gut as part of our body's immune system. Although we know for certain that gut disorders contribute to many diseases and weaken our immune system. So first, give us a background in the role of our gut for preventing disease, and what are the most common chronic illnesses associated with a weakened gut?
Well, the gut is really where the body absorbs its nutrients from the food and then sends them to the rest of the organism to be utilized. Now, around the intestines also is located 80% of our immune system, and there's a nervous system around the gut that is bigger in size and in many ways in activity than the brain in our skulls. So literally the gut is involved in almost every aspect of our physiology. And there's no way to separate the gut from what's happening in the rest of the body. So, you know, it's a crucial aspect of our organism.
You've called our intestinal wall our body's Achilles heel. But explain why that's so, and what is the gut-associated lymphatic tissue, or what's called GALT, and that some scientists are calling the body's second brain?
Yeah. And second brain only in the sense that we are talking about it secondarily, but as I said, in size and in different activities, it may be even the first brain. The GALT is just the name of the gut associated lymphatic tissue, which is the immune system that lives within and around the intestines. I call this the Achilles heel because it's literally the weakest point in our organism. See, we're eating and drinking all day long, and a lot of the things that we're eating and drinking are causing the disruption of our intestines, primarily the intestinal flora. So this is where our organisms break first. And the thing is this, that we don't notice that this is happening at the beginning, and we may feel the impact of what is happening somewhere else. Like, for example, your hair may start falling, or you may get allergies or skin rashes or so many other problems all over the body that people not normally associate with the gut, but this is where the problems begin.
Explain to us, differentiate between the good and bad microflora in the gut, and what are the primary factors that reduce the good flora and increase the bad flora?
Well, there's thousands of different types of bacteria, but only some of them are designed or have evolved in order to live in symbiosis with us. We host them, they do some work for us, we keep them safe, and we throw them free food. So the bad organisms are just organisms that don't do those jobs that the good bacteria are supposed to do, and furthermore, they can cause harm. And we're not talking only about bacteria, we're talking about yeast, we're talking about funguses, we're talking about parasites, we're talking about all kinds of organisms that may take residence in the gut and are not supposed to be there. And the way that our modern lifestyle harms them is because, you know, we add all kinds of preservatives and conservatives and all kinds of other chemicals that, when you eat them, they end up affecting the good bacteria and may end up even promoting the growth of the bad organisms that shouldn't be there.
But be specific. Give us what you would consider your top 10 good bacteria-producing items, food, beverages, and your top 10 bad-producing bacteria.
Well, you know, it's a little more complicated than that, because even if you're eating good foods and all organic and without any chemicals, the amount in which we eat, the quantities, the combinations, the frequency in which we eat, even if it's good food, may end up causing a disruption in the intestinal flora. But some of the good foods are, you know, all the foods with fiber, like the fruits and vegetables, mostly vegetables, because fruit sometimes may promote the growth of yeast because of the sugar content. Those are the foods that provide the prebiotics, or the foods that feed the good bacteria. Now, there's foods that also provide good bacteria themselves, like all the fermented foods, kimchi, sauerkraut, and all those things. So those are the foods that are good for the bacterial growth. The foods that promote the growth of bad bacteria are sugar, simple carbohydrates, and dairy products and things like that.
Aside from unhealthy foods and toxic chemicals ingested, two other enemies of gut health I frequently witness are stress and certain allergies. Excessive stress in a person's life has a direct impact upon their digestion. So when we're stressed and in a fight-or-flight mode, we even feel it in our stomach. Then food allergies such as gluten and dairy are known to weaken our ability to digest properly. So first, biologically, how does stress affect our digestive health? And then second, in your protocol for determining whether or not a person has a gluten or dairy allergy, you provide an experiment people can perform. So explain that to us, and then we'll wrap it up here. We're up near the end of our program.
Yeah, well, as I said, there's two major ways in which I can think of that stress harms our digestive processes. One of them is the obvious one. You know, when you're stressed, you end up choosing bad foods and comfort foods and things like that. So that is one way, which is very obvious. Another way is the nervous system around the gut has to adapt and, you know, produce adrenaline and compensate for all the stress and all the increased metabolism and things that are happening when one is stressed. So that ends up affecting the functioning of our second brain as well. Now, if you want to figure out which foods are your trigger foods, the foods that trigger malfunctioning of your gut, the best way to go around it is to eliminate the foods that we know are harmful for so many people for at least 2 to 3 weeks and then start reintroducing them one at a time for a couple of days. Like, for example, you eliminate dairy, gluten, sugar, coffee, and alcohol for a couple of weeks. And then you reintroduce one at a time. Like, for example, you eat dairy product a couple of days in a row, and you closely monitor how you're feeling, from gross things as allergies and diarrhea and bloating to subtle things like not sleeping well or having bad dreams or having a bad mood and effects of the sort.
Good advice. We're out of time. Thank you very much, and all the best with Clean Gut. And the website is cleangut.com. Appreciate you being on to share this with us.
Yes, my pleasure. Thank you.
Dr. Alejandro Junger, MD. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Now let's say hello to Eutrice Lee. Hi, Eutrice.
Hello, Gary. Today, of course, we'll be noting the actual 50th anniversary, but differently. We'll be talking about education, which was a major plank in the demands 50 years ago. We'll be talking about education apartheid in America with a senior fellow at the University of California Law School. And then we'll talk about what the Republicans are doing, their pledge of racial allegiance on this day.
I'm sure that more than most, you're aware that if you took the top 100 civil rights leaders over the last 250 years, virtually every single one today would be marked as a citizen terrorist, as a domestic terrorist. All of them would be on watch lists. They'd be harassed because their positions against either the interference or the subordination of human rights and civil rights and constitutional rights. And therefore, today, the FBI has deemed that, and Homeland Security and 16 different federal agencies, that anti-war activity virtually is identical to domestic terrorism. So when you consider that the vast majority of people that will be supporting a Martin Luther King approach, along with other civil rights leaders that preceded him and followed him, he was very much anti-war, which means then that the people speaking, Obama and Eric Holter, are indeed against virtually everything on the same agenda that these people believe in. And the irony of it is that right in the midst of all these people, you're going to have the FBI and Homeland Security looking at the largest gathering of anti-war activists, even though they're not there specifically for anti-war. Do you see the irony in this?
Well, of course. In fact, that's where we're going to be starting today, on the very day, the actual anniversary date of the March on Washington. The nation is on the brink of declaring war. Absolutely everything against what Martin Luther King was talking about. So it tells you that the more things change sometimes, the more they remain the same.
We look forward to it. Eutrice Lead right now. Please stay with us.
I've heard people say that too much of anything is not good for you, baby. But I don't know about that. There's many times that we've loved and we've shared love and made love. It doesn't seem to me like it's enough. It's just not enough, baby. It's just not enough. Oh, oh, baby. Nothing. My love.